It's the Podcast the News show, where the editors of podcasthenews.com share their insights on a wide range of podcasting topics.
Welcome to Podcaster News Show, episode number 23. My name is Sean Thorpe.
And I am Jen Thorpe.
And we are back to bring you the news items over the last couple weeks that we thought are worth mentioning but weren't quite enough to go ahead and post on the actual PodcasterNews.com site. And I do want to say up front here that if you are subscribed to the Podcaster News Show and you're not regularly visiting the website, then you are missing out on really the majority of the content we produce. So be sure, if you are trying to, you know, just kind of keep up with the news in the space, we try to keep up with it as best as we can. And we do have that resource available for you, podcasternews.com. And it's got all the usual, you know, RSS subscribe options and all that kind of stuff. So please do go over there and get subscribed and, you know, keep up with everything that's going on, including the stuff that we don't bring to the podcast. So the first item on our list here, Jen, is got your name in front of it. So why don't you go ahead with that?
Okay. So recently I found something called the Podcasting Weekly, which sounds like it fits over here. And it is a paper.li or paperly is what I like to say it as. I don't know if that's accurate, but it works for me. But you know what I mean? We've seen these things before. You've probably seen them before. It is an aggregate that someone sets up to pull things off of Twitter. And I think in some cases you can pull stuff from other, you might be able to pull stuff from other sources. I'm not sure of that, but I've seen all of the paperlies I've seen have pulled things in from Twitter, and you can tailor it to be about a specific topic. So that's what this is. What we have here is the Podcasting Weekly. It is by James Martell. He is the host of the Affiliate Marketers Super Boot Camp, and you can follow him on Twitter right from his Podcasting Weekly if you want to do that. So what he's got is, like I said, it's an aggregate, and there's just a whole bunch of little articles in here that have to do with podcasting. And he's got, you know, different sections. There's photos, videos, technology, arts and entertainment, business, science, sports, and more, which most paperlies tend to have, and it just sort of sorts it all for you in there. And, you know, you can check it out. I'm going to start checking it out weekly to see what he's pulled in, because it looks pretty interesting. But it's just stuff from all over the Twitter and talking about podcasts. He's got some of these are episodes of podcasts that someone tweeted out and said, hey, here's my show. And some of these are information about podcasts. The one he's got highlighted is something about Ultimate Guide to a Podcasting Setup on a Budget, which could be helpful for some people. And it just goes from there. But it's just, you know, there's not a whole lot to say. So like I said, it's not like we would write a whole blog about this kind of thing. And but it is interesting, and it is a good resource to, you know, check out stuff going on in podcasting, and it updates weekly.
Yeah, I'm looking at it here, and it definitely seems like there could be some useful stuff that he's aggregated here. There's an article called How to Get in Front of the Podcasting Trend, Why Brand Podcasting is a Missed Opportunity. A few other things. I certainly haven't dug that deeply into it, but it could be a useful resource for anybody that wants to keep up with the latest news in podcasting. And we'll have a link to it in our show notes at podcasternews.com if you want to go check that out on Paperly.
Right. And I think the way Paperly works, I think either he has to be following you or you have to be following him in order to get your stuff into the aggregate. I think he's got to follow you.
I don't know that that's true, because I feel like I've received notifications on Twitter from Paperlies that
now
aren't following me. So
yeah, you're right. I think it's different than when I had one a long time ago and just stopped using it.
But
when I was doing it, it was only pulling in people I was following, but this was quite some time ago. But you're right, I have been included in a couple of these Paperlies, not this Podcasting Weekly one as of yet, but other ones of people that I wasn't following. So
yeah.
And I think if your Twitter account is a private account like mine, I don't think you get included at all. So just be aware.
Probably not.
Mm-hmm.
So next up on our list is an article called How to Air Check Your Podcast. And this was written by Seth Riesler on the Radio Rivet blog. And it's some tips that he has for getting some, hopefully, constructive feedback on your podcast if you're looking for that. And to give a little background on this, the term air check actually comes from radio. And air checks are a thing that DJs would do where they would just kind of record their on-air breaks and they would just put them all together, you know, on a, well, it used to be on a tape. I'm sure there's more modern ways to do it now, probably an MP3 file. And they would use those for a few different things. The first one is they would just use them to get, you know, feedback on their own, you know, work that they're doing on air. You know, maybe they'd go to a program director or other people or people at the radio stations, just go, hey, this is what I sound like. What do you think? And then the other thing is, typically when you're looking for work in radio, you would supply air checks to, you know, your potential employers. It's sort of like an equivalent of a resume. They can see this person has a certain amount of, you know, chops at whatever level they're at and you know, is their style compatible with our station? And in this case, Seth Riesler is recommending that podcasters could do the same thing. And in this case, it'd be a little different with a podcast because you're probably not doing a lot of heavy segues in and out of, you know, sets of music like you would say on a terrestrial radio station. But
you could, you know, be if it was a music show.
That is true. But the other thing is you would just, you know, cut up different parts of your podcast that, I don't know, you really like or you're not sure of or just whatever the case is, you know, make a series of snippets, probably less than a minute long, just string them all together. And he's actually suggesting one way you could get feedback would be to use the service Mechanical Turk, which is provided by Amazon. And it's one of these services where you can go on and you can essentially hire people to do very low level tasks for not a lot of money. And, you know, that can be kind of a hit or miss thing. But his point is what you want to look for is if you get a lot of, you know, repetitive feedback. So if someone says, well, it sounds like you say, like, you know, a lot, or, you know, you don't sound very energetic, or you know, you sound bored, or you sound nasally, or your audio is too bassy. So if you know, spread this out over Mechanical Turk and get, you know, 100 people to listen to your show, and 25 of them or 30 of them or more come back and say the same thing, you can start to see a trend in there where, okay, well, maybe these are some things I need to work on. So I thought that was kind of intriguing, an interesting idea. You know, it's funny in podcasting because we can just start, right? We can just get the equipment at whatever level and start publishing whenever we want. We don't, there's no gatekeeper really, you know, so that's different from radio, whereas, you know, you can't usually just walk into a radio station and be on the air. And I was familiar with this concept of air checks because I did work in radio for a little while a long time ago, but I never thought about that in terms of a podcast. And I think this strategy of using Mechanical Turk, and really, you know, if you had a large enough community around you, you wouldn't necessarily need to go to something like Mechanical Turk. You could just put the file up there and ask however many of your friends, connections, social, whatever's you have, to do the same thing for you. But one of the nice things about this Mechanical Turk thing is there's a good chance that everyone you ask is going to do it because they're doing it in order to get paid. But more importantly, they probably don't have any pre-existing connection to you, so they don't have any expectations. They're not going to be worried about, oh, well, I don't want to hurt his feelings. I want to make sure I'm supportive, you know, that kind of thing. So it's not a bad way to go if you feel like you want to get that kind of, you know, feedback for your podcast.
Now, I've done some stuff with Mechanical Turk, and it's hit or miss, even if you're essentially working for them. You know, mm-hmm. You're not the person making a, hey, I want you to listen to my show. You're the person maybe listening to the show or doing whatever little menial task someone has for you. It's hit or miss with a lot of that, you know, as to what it's going to be. But what he's, you know, suggested, just probably just as a suggestion in his article here, is, you know, in this case, we're going to pay people a few dollars to listen to the first 10 minutes of your podcast and give you 300 words of feedback. Okay. It doesn't sound like much. Okay. So 10 minutes of listening to a podcast, that's 10 minutes right there that you have to be doing, you know, focus listening on. 300 words of feedback. Some of the blogs I write for clients, I'm getting paid to write, you know, 400 or 450 words or something like that. And I'm getting more than a couple of bucks, you know, to do it. So, I mean, if I were doing, you know, if I were working on Mechanical Turk and I came across this thing that says, we'll give you a dollar to listen to 10 minutes of this podcast and write what's essentially a blog, I wouldn't do it because I would feel like that's not enough money for me to do it, you know. But if you're not a writer, you know, you might get some stuff, but you know, you're right. People that were on Mechanical Turk probably have no idea who you are, who your podcast is, what it's about, any of that stuff. And so they're going to be able to give you an unbiased review, possibly, unless what you're giving them has content that has any kind of controversy, you know? And you never know what that's going to be.
Yeah, that's true. And it is worth noting that, you know, Mechanical Turk, in a lot of ways, it's one of these services that is relying on, you know, from a North American perspective, you know, offshore, overseas.
Right, that's true,
work
too.
Where,
that's true.
Where, you know, where the cost of, you know, time versus labor, however you want to phrase that, would be a bit of a different economic scale than what we'd expect here. And, you know, that's good or bad depending on your perspective. I think including, you know, 300 words is, it's a good idea to put that in there. And my guess is most of your responses won't be 300 words, but it's more than just, you know, two sentences where someone goes, I like it, it's good, or it sucks. It's because what you want is you want to be able to get actual, you know, points where someone is saying, you know, it sounds good because of this, or it sounds bad because of this, or I like this, or like whatever. So it would be definitely a hit or miss kind of thing with Mechanical Turk. But I think the reason that he chose that is it's an option that's out there and you won't have to lay out a lot of money or time. And, you know, it may work out greatly for you or it may not.
So. It may not. That's another thing. I mean, you could get people like me that look at that and go, that's, you know, 300 words is a blog. It better be more than a dollar or it's not worth my time. I can go spend that time working for more than a dollar on about the same amount of words, you know. But, you know, it just depends. I don't I haven't done much of anything with Mechanical Turk in a very, very long time. So maybe it's changed. I don't know.
So what's next on the sheet here, Jim?
Okay. So next we have a blog from MMO Gypsy. And Syl writes about gaming and all this kind of stuff. And she also does some podcasting, too. And she had this article titled, Invisible Audience, What Your Podcast Stats Won't Tell You. Okay, so what is this blog about, then, if it's not about saying, oh, you don't need stats? She's not advocating that at all. What she's saying is that, you know, in some cases, you have an invisible audience. And this is true with blogging as well. But it's, you know, it's also true with podcasting. You've got, you know, however many listeners. And most of them aren't going to leave you a comment.
Yeah.
So you'll never have any idea, you know, what, you know, what that person, that invisible person that you don't have any way of contacting or doesn't choose to contact you, you'll have no way of knowing what they thought of your show. You know, what can you improve? What did they like? What do they have questions about? What do they agree with? You know, whatever. The conversation just kind of stops there. So that's kind of, you know, part of what she was saying is that just because you don't get, you know, a lot of comments coming back at you, either on the blog post for your podcast or through other means, doesn't mean no one's listening. It means you could have invisible listeners, essentially, that just aren't responding in any particular way. The other thing that I thought was interesting is she looked at some of the stats from you know, from her show, and she noticed that the very first two episodes were being downloaded a lot, like still. And so what she's noticing is that the stats she's seeing aren't necessarily, this is how many people listen to your show this week. It's, this is how many people listen to your content.
Yeah.
You know? Right. So if those first two things are still being downloaded, you know, that's good for you. It's good that people are still looking at that, but it doesn't mean, wow, you know, all these people are looking at my show. It must be that they really like something I did in this particular episode, when really it might be that a bunch of people found your show recently and were listening to the first two, you know, that kind of thing. So I thought that was kind of interesting, especially since, you know, with podcasts, you don't get a lot of feedback, generally speaking, you know, especially, you know, the guy was just saying, go to Mechanical Turk for that kind of feedback.
That's true,
you know, you don't always get a lot of stuff. But I mean, she found out her backlog is being listened to, which is really good for her. You'd want that, you know, you don't want your stuff to be kind of irrelevant or uninteresting a week later or something like that. So that's a good thing. And I looked at the comments. She did get some comments on her blog, and there was a person that left a comment I thought was really interesting. And I can't pronounce this person's name, and I can't tell gender from the icon. It's a little cartoon bird, so I don't know. But this person said, basically, to summarize, this person listens to podcasts while driving.
Uh-huh.
So they can't easily just sort of type up, you know, go to the blog, type right. up a comment, or, you know, kind of mess with their phone to try to do an audio comment or that kind of thing. So that essentially makes the person an invisible listener, but they're listening.
That is true. And I think this topic of, you know, audience engagement is pretty interesting. And in fact, they just did a pretty good episode of Podcasters Roundtable talking about this. And that comment you just mentioned, you know, someone on the show, I believe it was Daniel Lewis of Audacity to Podcast, actually said that. He said, you know, a lot of times I listen to podcasts on my phone. I'm not immediately in a place where I can leave a comment. And that's been, you know, my own experience as well. I mean, when I first started listening to podcasts, I was doing most of that on the computer. So it was very easy to just go over to a website and drop off a comment. But now, you know, I might be anywhere. I could be on the bus. I might be washing the dishes. So it's not as easy to just turn around and leave feedback. And I understand this plight very well that a lot of podcasters have, where we kind of feel like, you know, we're sort of yelling into the ether and nobody's really listening. So I get that. And I thought it was interesting, too. She mentioned in the article, and Jen, you brought this up as well, she said that when they launched the show, you know, their first two episodes got around 1,000 downloads. And I don't know if that's cumulative or a piece, and it's not really important. But
well, she also mentioned that, if I'm understanding this correctly, that she and the other two people on the show are all bloggers. So they able to kind of, you know, get
and
the word out.
That's where I was going with that, because when people start new shows, especially if they don't have any kind of an audience already, regardless of where that audience is, if you're, you know, a blogger, or you do video or streaming, or, you know, Instagram, whatever it is, if you're kind of, you know, if you start doing something creative, whatever it is, on the internet, and you're essentially an unknown, then you spend a lot of time just building an audience through doing the work. And it was interesting for her to say that, you know, when they launched this podcast, the hosts were all most of them were bloggers that had a certain amount of, you know, audience, notoriety, whatever you want to say, and that allowed them to, you know, kind of launch the show with a bit of a bigger audience than maybe most shows would have. And this problem comes up a lot when people start shows. You know, they want to know, well, how come, you know, I'm only getting X number of downloads? And, you know, it takes time. I mean, unless you are someone that comes into podcasting and you're essentially already famous, you know, it's different when...
Well, if Adam Carolla starts a show, you know, he's
exactly.
already famous.
I mean, when Adam Carolla got
him.
Yeah, when Adam Carolla got into podcasting, it was a little different for him because...
Because everybody knew who he was already, you know, and they already knew whether or not they wanted to hear him. They either liked him or they didn't. They found out he had a show. They found where it was and went from there.
Yeah.
But for most people, yeah, it's hard to get started, and I think it was a good idea that they, I don't know if they intended it this way or not, I don't know, you know, everything about this website, but, you know, it works out good that they were all bloggers and could kind of advertise the show that way. But I think in addition, like, if you have a podcast that's about, say, gaming, and you follow a lot of gamers on social media, you have a better chance of saying, hey, this is my show about this particular game that we all play. You got a better chance of getting some listeners than if you said, here is my show about, you know, knitting hats for kittens. And, you know, they're all people that don't knit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So the next thing on our list here is a blog post that is cleverly titled Quit Peeing in the Sandbox, Buy Your Way to the Top of SoundCloud. And this was posted by Dave Jackson of School of Podcasting. This is actually on his personal site at davidjackson.org. And he put up this blog post where he's talking about these services where you can buy, you know, plays on SoundCloud. You put down a certain amount of money, and I guess overnight or over the course of a few days, whatever it is, suddenly the number of plays that you're receiving on your SoundCloud files goes up super high. And this is nothing new in the, you know, internet and social media space. These services have been around that'll help you however, you know, however
ethical.
That's the word. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
However unethically, I think is the word I was shooting for. That'll, you know, give you more likes, more followers, more plays on SoundCloud, whatever it is. And, you know, we could go on for hours and hours about all the things we don't like about SoundCloud in relation to podcasting. Now, I will say this. If anyone decides to do this to try to beef up your numbers on SoundCloud, from what I understand, not that long ago, SoundCloud changed the way it tabulates stats, and it looks at the plays you get through the SoundCloud media player separately from plays you get through your SoundCloud podcast RSS feed. So if I were someone that was in the position to buy podcast ads, and someone pointed me to their SoundCloud plays, and their media player plays were significantly higher than their RSS downloads, I would be really suspicious of how they got those numbers. And ultimately, this always comes back to my assumption is that when people want to artificially inflate numbers, especially when you're talking about plays of a podcast, they want to appear that they're getting, you know, a bigger audience than they really are, so that they can in turn go to sponsors and say, hey, look at all these plays we got. We're amazing. You know, you want to advertise with us. And then ultimately what I have to assume happens is maybe a sponsor falls for that. They pay a certain amount of money for, you know, an ad package, and then they get no return on that, and then they never come back. So from my perspective, as someone who looks at podcasting as a, you know, very much a long tail game, I don't really understand why you would decide this is the right strategy, other than you might get a quick return. But the thing is, usually if you are, you know, trying to get some type of ad and you're basing it solely on what your download numbers are, you're talking usually in terms of CPM, which is based purely on your download. And the last I heard, and maybe this has changed, but, you know, on average, your CPMs right now are running between like maybe $16 and $20. And understand that I have no inside information on this, so I could be completely wrong. If you're really lucky, you might pull in like a $30 or $40 CPM, which is really high. And so now, and Dave even does some of this math on his site. He says, okay, well, let's say you pay, you know, $5 for 1,000 plays, and you can manage to get a $40 CPM off of that. Your net gain is $35. It's not bad, but it just still seems like, I mean, it'd be one thing if your gain was $100, $500, $1,000. It just seems like in the end, you're still not even necessarily making a lot of money for the money you're putting out, when it's not a guarantee anyway. And it just baffles me when I see these things, and it happens all the time, really in everything online, but it definitely happens in podcasting as well, where somebody says, okay, well, I'm not seeing the organic growth in the ways I want. Maybe what I should do is refocus my efforts, refine my production, work on marketing in, you know, ethical, organic ways, find my audience, interact with them, invite them into my show, and not, you know, hit them over the head with it or whatever the case is. Or I could just go over here, spend $5 or $10, get a bunch of fake plays, and pretend that I'm successful. I really don't see the point in that, but it happens. People do it. And Dave says, don't.
Yeah, Dave agree says, with him. Don't do that. And I think part of his point in here, if I'm understanding correctly, is, you know, you've got these companies that say, I want to buy an ad in podcasting. Oh, look, this one has, you know, so many downloads. This will be great. I shall buy an ad for their show. And then they get nothing back, like Sean was saying. So now the next time they have the opportunity to advertise somewhere, they're going to say, well, we tried podcasting and that didn't work, so we're never doing that again.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that hurts everybody. That hurts all the legitimate podcasters who really do have those numbers of downloads. You know, now they have to prove that they really do. And I don't know how you do that exactly. Send them over your stats. I don't know. But that's kind of a problem. And the other thing I wanted to say is, you were saying, you know, I can't imagine why people want to do this. I have a suspicion.
Okay.
My suspicion is something I've learned from blogging and paying attention to what it's like to work as a blogger.
Yeah.
Or as a freelance writer kind of thing. But there is this notion out there in blogging, and I suspect maybe it's leaked its way over to podcasting as well. There's this notion that you can set up a website, pick a topic, whatever your topic is, doesn't much matter. Pick a nice, you know, SEO title that has all the keywords people are going to want to type whenever they're looking for that particular topic. And then populate it with a bunch of blogs really fast. Don't put anybody's name on them. Don't put a date on there. God forbid someone find out how old this is. No, you want to scam people into thinking that your blog has relevant data and that it's going to be updated and that kind of thing. And so you start, you know, putting a handful of blogs on there that, you know, you pay someone to write. And after a while, you've got a bunch of content. You got some, you know, visuals in there, and you're starting to, you know, get people that are picking it up through Google. And so you're going, okay, well, I have this wonderful blog here. I'm going to throw a ton of ads at it and set it and forget it, and I'll just make money.
Yeah.
And people seem to think that works. It doesn't.
Right.
It does not work. All of the content on there is not going to be what they call evergreen forever, you know. And Google will eventually figure out things are old, you know. It's not going to value them as much as things
right.
that are brand new or things that are extraordinarily well written. You can find really old stuff that's really well written sometimes, you know, because it's the best source or it's got the most details or whatever. Now, this is in blogging. So I suspect what we've got going on here is, oh, well, I hear podcasting makes money. Well, I'll just start a podcast about, you know, pick a topic, and I'm going to pay for all these downloads, and then I'll have a bunch of downloads. You know, look at that. There'll be numbers that say I have a bunch of downloads. So now I can get someone to buy an ad and I'll make money. And all I have to do is that, and it'll be fine. Set it and forget it. And that's what I think people are trying to do with podcasting when they do this sort of thing.
Yeah, that makes
sense. I don't think they're actually believing, look, I'm popular. I think they're trying to convince, you know, people who,
right, yeah.
who, you know, want to buy ads that they're popular. And I think the idea is set it and forget it. You know, it's a crock pot. It's not, you know, I mean, this is the crock pot form of podcasting or of blogging, where you just set it and forget it and leave it there and ignore it, do nothing, do no more work than setting it up. And hours later, you have this wonderful thing, you know.
Yeah.
But it doesn't really work in the real world unless you're talking about a crock pot.
All right, Jen, why don't you finish out with our last item here on the list?
Okay, so we have this article. It's on the Media Waves, I think it is. Yeah, the Media Waves. It's by Anne Sewell. And it has to do with Patreon. Now, there's a ton of podcasts that make money or are supported by Patreon. They're,
yep.
you know, their listeners become patrons and, you know, how that all works. Well, it seems that in October, the Patreon website was hacked. And
yeah.
a bunch of little hackers got in there and picked up some stuff. And so what they started doing is sending out this really, like, obviously spammy email to people who had an account at Patreon. And so people got these emails, and she's got a picture of it here. And the subject says, it says, Mia recommends dash I will leak your identity. So that's kind of a scary subject to have someone come in with, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the email said, unfortunately, your data was leaked in the recent hacking of the Patreon website, and I now have your information. I have your tax ID, tax forms, SSN, DOB, name, address, credit card details, and more sensitive data. Now I can go ahead and leak your details online, which would damage your credit score like hell and would create a lot of problems for you. It would damage your credit score like hell. That's
wow.
what it says in there, you know. How professional.
Yeah.
And then if you would like to prevent me from doing this, you need to send, now you're thinking, oh, they want $1 million.
Yeah.
No, you need to send one Bitcoin to the following BTC address. And they
right.
had an address in there
yeah.
and they wanted, and then it teaches you how to go and get Bitcoins, and it tells you you have 48 hours to send them a Bitcoin. So that's all kinds of, oh, this isn't right. You know
yeah.
what I mean? So that was going around to people that got that. And, you know, it's just kind of a really strange email. And eventually there was a response from Patreon that said, you know, hey there, apologize for the blanket email. But yet we have received reports of emails being sent to many of the email addresses leaked in the breach. So you are not the only one who has received this threat. Fortunately, I can assure you that the person sending these emails is lying. And it goes on to say how they're encrypting all of their forms and right. all of this stuff. And, you know, our system does not have access to your full credit card details. So they can't get it from that. You know, the unencrypted information that was leaked in the data breach does not present a risk to your credit score or identity theft. So it's not going to ruin your credit score like hell or something like that, right?
Exactly. Yeah. They should have actually replied with that.
Oh, I know. Yeah. It also tells you, you know, ignore that email and any further emails. Do not send them Bitcoin. And there's an apology in there, of course. But, you know, it's just interesting. So if you're supporting someone on Patreon, you may have gotten one of these and wondered, what the heck is this? Or maybe your spam, you know, your email caught, you know, the spam and just got rid of that or something. But man, you know,
I can
go ahead and leak your details online, which would damage your credit score like hell.
Hell yeah.
And give me a Bitcoin, please. Like, nothing about this sounds legitimate at all.
Right.
Know?
And when you get something like this, it essentially seems like if you give into it once, then you may as well give into it forever, because they're just going to keep coming back to you and going, oh, yeah, well, thanks for that other Bitcoin. We're gonna do this. If you don't give us a Bitcoin a week into infinity, we'll keep doing it. So
yeah, or they'll just, you know, whatever. But I mean, it, you know, okay, so you're a hacker and you've gotten these details. You don't really have all of the details you're saying you have, but you're telling people, oh, I've got, you know, all they probably have is your email address or something, right?
Yeah.
And to tell them that you have all of these things and then to word it this way and ask for a Bitcoin, you know what I mean? Like, not, you know, I want $1,000 in American currency or, you know, whatever. They want a Bitcoin. That's a little weird. That's not the type of currency people are going to normally have. You know, it's still a little bit out there. I think most people, you know, they're not mining Bitcoin at home. So, I mean, it was really bizarre. But, you know, there you go. If your podcast has a Patreon, it's possible some of your patrons got this lovely little email that's just ridiculously spammy.
And I think the final word on something like this is, anytime anyone reaches out to you, you know, because of a service you're using and says they have sensitive information on you, before you do anything else, go back to the service that they claim, you know, that they have your information from and check with them first. And, you know, if it, I mean, I don't know, they should be able to tell you, hey, this is a credible threat. Go to the police or the FBI or whoever and, you know, do some more follow-up on it.
But you get that a lot with, if, you know, I play a lot of video games and every so often somebody's got a beta. And as soon as it's, this brand new game coming out, it has a beta. You get all these like spammy emails saying, oh, you know, send us the password for your account and you'll have your beta key. And at the same time, the company's going, no, we're not doing it that way. You know, those aren't real. Or we don't even have the beta ready yet. That's not even real. You know, you get this kind of stuff. So, I mean, I guess it happens with everything, but this, you know, yeah.
Well, we'll have a link to everything we mentioned today in our show notes. Just look for Podcaster News Show, episode 23 at podcasternews.com. And while we're not going to be Mechanical Turk in it anytime soon, we would love to get your feedback. You can leave us a comment on this or any other episode or anything else on the blog. Or if you poke around there hard enough, you can find some email addresses if you'd prefer to reach out that way. So with that, I would like to say thank you for listening. We'll be back with you if we can find enough stuff. I think we can.
I think we can, yeah.
In another 2 weeks or so for the next episode of Podcaster News. You can follow me on Twitter at Shawno, S-H-A-W-N-O. You can follow Jen at Queen of Haiku. And with that, we'll be back with you in a couple weeks.
Bye, people.